Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Jeannie and Bill Stayskull. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting, entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Today's topic is cell phones and other media addictions. This episode is sponsored by the Knights of Columbus Council 7764 at St. Philip Catholic Church in Franklin, Tennessee. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM, 100.5 on your radio dial and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today is dealing with cell phone and other media addictions. Our guest expert is adolescent and family psychologist, Dr. James Wellborn. Dr. Wellborn received his PhD from Rochester University in New York and is a columnist for Brentwood Homepage and the author of Raising Teens in the 21st Century. He sees teens and families in the Brentwood United Methodist Church complex. He and his wife have two adult children and live in Brentwood, Tennessee. He will be joined by Susan and Kyle Brandt to round out our panel. A great big welcome to our guests and to you, our listeners. Now my monologue. I have seen it, you have seen it, everyone has seen it. A family addicted to cell phones. Mary and I were sitting one evening in a popular upscale restaurant when a lady and three children walked in and sat down at the table next to us. The hostess welcomed them and offered each a menu. None of them took the menu, but as if choreographed, they all, in synchronized motion, reached for their phones. Several minutes later, a waiter approached their table, cleared his throat, and politely asked if they had any questions about the menu or if they were ready to order. Mom looked up, glanced at him, shook her head, and mumbled no. Sometimes later, the waiter returned and was given the same unenthusiastic welcome, but this time, Mother picked up her menu and ordered. Then she asked the kids what they wanted. One by one, the two girls and their little brother sighed, and without putting down their umbilical cord to their life-giving phones, looked briefly at the menu and ordered, then returned to their source of life. When the food came, not one member of the family acknowledged it. The server placed each plate on the table and left. I think I would have accidentally dropped a plate in one's lap. Much later, they began eating. I was surprised they didn't send everything back to the kitchen because it was cold. The eating part of the dinner was brief. In a minute, they were done, paid the bill, got up, and left. I don't think any one of them spoke a word to another. The whole pantomime kind of ruined my dinner. Now, we have talked before about family dinner, but no observer would have called what we witnessed that evening a family dinner. Granted, no dad was there, but many families do not have fathers, so that's not an excuse. But phone addiction is more than an inconvenience for restaurant workers and their observant patrons. Psychologist Richard Fried said, and I quote, "Parents say their kids' extreme overuse of phones, video games, and social media is the most difficult parenting issue they face, and in many cases is tearing the family apart. Preteen and teen girls refuse to get off their phones, even though it's remarkably clear that the devices are making them miserable." He goes on, "I also see far too many boys with gaming obsessions lead them to forego interest in school, extracurricular activities, and anything else productive. Some of these boys, as they reach their later teens, use their large bodies to terrorize parents who attempt to set gaming limits. What none of these parents understand," he continued, "is that their children's destructive behavior and obsession with technology is the predictable consequence of a merger between tech industry and psychology. This merger makes it possible to develop social media, video games, and phones with drug-like power to seduce young users." End of quote. One of my sons says this about Fried's article. "First," he said, "the providers of the social media platforms are not interested in your well-being or the well-being of your kids. They're interested only in making your kids addicted to their platform. And quite frankly, for some people, this addiction is a road to hell itself. Furthermore, he said, when the product is free, you are the commodity. You are being bought and sold to the advertisers. The designers of these platforms and games are doing everything to keep you addicted and enslaved. Then he recommended, keep your kids and yourself off of social media and just walk away from the online video games. Just don't limit social media, prevent it. Interestingly, another of my sons, and I have three, said Freed is just another doomsdayer trying to scare everybody. It's no different than those who said Elvis and his music were sending all of his listeners straight to hell. He says, ignore it, it will pass. Yes, social media is purposely designed to be addictive. What's a parent to do? My first reaction is to agree with my first son and recommend you ban all media from your family. But that's not realistic. Students today, and all of us, use computers and the internet every day to help us learn and live in this fast-paced world. These technologies make life better and or worse for all of us. I think there must be something between banning and ignoring, which makes a lot of sense. But before we get to that, I want to hear from our guest expert. Dr. Welborn, welcome back to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM on your radio and streaming throughout the world on WB.org.
You mean I'm going out across the entire planet?
The whole world, and maybe even up to Mars.
All the way to Fairview?
You were guests on our second show when we discussed discipline.
And you had me back.
Yes.
I feel so honored.
It was a great show, and you ought to be honored. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to get some of your wisdom and knowledge inside of our
Thank
own
you.
Little skulls. In your book, Raising Teens in the 21st Century, you said, and I quote, your kid can get into just as much or even more mischief online in their bedrooms than they could on the streets. Now, that's a powerful message.
Yeah.
What should a parent do?
Well, I think the first thing is that devices and technology are now completely integrated into teens and young adults' lives. And for many of us adults, it's integrated into our lives. And so the idea of saying we've got to just stop this or turn it off or go backwards, there's a tremendous amount of, as you were mentioning, there's a tremendous amount of benefit that has brought and is bringing to us and to kids. The issue is, for this, like almost every other thing in terms of parenting, especially teenagers, and that is the idea first of balance about what else is in the mix there, but also about limit setting and having them have to be responsible and be accountable for what they're doing and what are the important responsibilities that they have in their lives. And so the degree to which the technologies and the devices are interfering with that is what then starts introducing the notion of intervening in some way as a parent.
So you said that you must learn to trust your kids.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
How does that happen?
Well, trust but verify maybe is the concept.
Good.
And so, because the difficulty with this topic is that it makes really good what is increasingly these days called clickbait, which is having this kind of scary, quick title to something like the internet addiction is destroying our kids' lives. And it turns out that the problematic behavior for the devices and for the internet with teens having that problematic behavior is still relatively rare. It's still a small percentage. And that doesn't mean that they won't want to push the limits about that, but it requires you as a parent to start putting some limits in place. And I've got some things in the book. On my website, I continue to blog about parenting issues, and there's more specific things about addressing various aspects of this that you can find there and all other places on the internet. But the things that are important, I think, in the broadest sense, is that you have a curfew or a structure set around the use of it. And so certainly there needs to be a timeline for when it goes off or when you stop. And so the idea of this just moving into the night is causing problems that people are increasingly aware of the disruption of sleep for teenagers. And so having a back end to when they can be doing anything, using the phone, playing video games, staying up and watching YouTube, Netflix, anything, any of that kind of stuff is important. But actually find that one of the things that can help a lot is, instead of focusing exclusively on setting limits on the device or on the access to the internet or gaming or whatever, and that in this category, that you actually have things they have to also do. And so if they also have to eat dinner with the family, if they also have to have a certain time for their homework, if they also have to have, I know it seems an outrageous suggestion, but they have to read actual book-like things at some point, that they have to be involved in some activity. When you do those kinds of things, then you say, with what leftover time you have. So sometimes you can sidestep the whole argument about, and this is especially true for kids who are gaming, you can sidestep the whole argument, because you're not talking about gaming, you're talking about you've got to do other things. And so you require them and expect them to have a more balanced life that's in there.
That's a very, very good concept. You know, I read that just in this week's USA Today, that 50% of kids and 25% of parents feel they spend too much time on screens.
Sure.
They feel themselves.
Sure.
And yet they feel at a loss to correct that. Yeah. Is it really an addiction?
It can evolve into addictive-like behavior, and there's just beginning to be research about the effects of kids who demonstrate extreme, obsessive, almost kind of comprehensive involvement with gaming and the internet use, that there's beginning to be research about this that suggests there are some effects of an unbalanced approach to this. I'm going to use that phrase to reflect what I was talking about before. So, yes, in the sense that there is a problem with that kind of thing, but that's most of us as parents don't actually have to address that. Most of us have to address the more everyday kind of problem of them having the internet and having the devices be able to be a substitute when you don't really have anything else to do. And so one of the things that's happening is that it's the way that kids are getting bored these days are not because they don't have something to do and they need to then use that boredom to motivate them to start looking for something interesting, engaging, relevant to themselves. But the availability of all the stuff that's on the internet, and again, the devices and social apps and gaming, gives them something to do. And so there's a phenomena of kids being bored while they're doing that, but there are ways in which the programmers of these different applications and games design it to keep you pulled in. And you don't realize this when you're doing it. It's not a conscious decision that you make. So kids are pulled in. It makes sense to me that they're saying, you know, I spend too much time on that. But the question is whether they will then, by realizing that, stop spending time on it. And the answer is no for teenagers. They won't stop on their own. You don't have to be harsh about it, but, mm-hmm. but there's going to need to be some structure and limit setting around that.
Well, I like that limit setting. You know, kids are always bored.
They need to be.
They need to be.
From a motivational perspective, boredom makes you seek out what is personally relevant and interesting and find your own kind of heart path. Mm-hmm. But you have to, it doesn't just show up. You have to have time to kind of flounder around. And the technologies interfere with you being able to flounder around on your own. You have to flounder around through somebody else's kind of concept of what material they're presenting to you.
So you use that word floundering around, and it matches what I would call thinking, but I don't know what that means.
Well, and that would describe my thinking, but that's like other people's thinking may be more productive. No, and so,
but I think that when kids are bored, it gives them time to think.
And no, surely.
But I remember when I was bored at home, I'd say, "Ma, I'm bored."
And what? When were you? At what year was it? You were a teenager.
1860. Was last century, right. Way early last century.
It was 2 weeks ago.
But she would say, "Okay, you're bored.
Yeah,
clean the garage.
I got something for you to do.
Mow the lawn. I got something for you to do." And you know, I never got addicted to doing those things as the kids do now.
I know.
You know. But I sure got addicted to not asking her or telling her I was bored.
And there is research that is relatively old, meaning it came in the 70s and 80s, that was about...
1970s.
That 1970s and 1980s. That was talking about there is a certain amount of downtime that teenagers need that's predictive of positive mental health and positive outcomes. And so they need to have a period of time where they're not doing anything and they're just thinking. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is disappearing because of the capacity to fill that time with stuff.
Junk.
And so, well, some of it's junk, but it's not, they don't have that time. Again, not all of the time that kids spend on the internet and on apps and on gaming is damaging, but if it substitutes for other things that they need, that's where it becomes more problematic.
Well, I've read a number of articles saying that kids who are good at gaming mm-hmm. are good at robotic surgery. No, I'm kidding.
Are you serious about that?
Yeah, because robotic
that
surgery...
That makes me nervous. I'm glad. I'm going to have to read the study carefully.
Well, there's a little bit of time between the game and the surgery.
There's a lot of time, doctor. You know exactly how much time there is.
Yeah, I'm going to change the subject. I loved your book. I loved your
book.
And one of the things
me too.
Yeah. One of the things I like about it was your... punishment for violating any of the rules that you set up.
I love punishment.
This daily talk for 7 straight days.
The lecture, exactly. The structured, intentional lecture that make them be absolutely miserable.
I'm going to read what you said about that. Daily, and here's what you said. Give them, quote, daily talks for 7 straight days about the importance of integrity, morals, self-discipline, and what things were like when you were a child. And all the aspirations you have for them in the areas of career, personal life, satisfaction, and relationships. Focus on how the decisions they make and the actions they show as an adolescent will have a powerful impact on how they turn out as adults. Make sure each talk lasts at least 20 minutes, but feel free to go on as long as you want. Don't worry if you have to repeat yourself. Repetition makes for excellent retention. Now, when I was studying psychology last century...
with Freud?
With Freud. Probably before Freud.
Exactly.
He said that, that violates a lot of rules of psychologists' speech. Kids listen to lectures. Kids want to hear about what you did when you were a kid. Lectures bore them. Really? Is that what you... I think that's great, and that's what
yes.
I did.
Well, boredom is part of the punishment, and so you're going to lecture them anyway, and so you might as well have it be beneficial in terms of discouraging them, because when they do something, they're going to have to hear about it long and over and over and over again. But also, there's a really curious phenomena for human beings in that we can also passively take in information, and so by having them sit there, and upon repetition... stuff kind of burrows in. Mm-hmm. And so it's not all just an amusing way for you to make your kid miserable and have enjoy that yourself, which I highly recommend. But it's that you also are finding another way in and at the same time discouraging them from doing something that repeats this. And it keeps you from having to do the more aggressive stuff or just take stuff away or just add stuff in. It's a variation of things for mm-hmm. punishment.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Jim, I've enjoyed your book immensely. Could you tell us, listeners, where they can get it?
Well, it's on the platforms. There's ebook forms, there's paper and ink forms, and Amazon has got it. You can, on my website, drjameswellborn.com, drjameswellborn.com, there's a tab for the book that you can, it'll send you all the places to do that. And then you can get the blog posts and other parenting stuff. There's all kinds of resources on that site. So.
Good, thank you.
Yep.
Now let's bring on our local guests. Susan Ryan has graduated from Fresno State University. Her husband, Kyle, has his degree in business from Fresno State and sells pet food and supplies to veterinarians. He is currently working on his master's degree. They have 3 sons, 14, 19, and 22, and live in Franklin and come to Holy Family Catholic Church. But with 3 kids at that age, you've had plenty of experience with parenting. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience? Susan, why don't you go ahead?
We've had a lot of experience. We have a 22-year-old, 18, and 14-year-old. And so we've had it over all of the Xbox, all of the different, you know,
lots
games.
Lots of changes across that time.
Lots of changes with phones, with everything. And so we had to start our rules early, like no TVs in the room. Gaming is only out in the middle of everything. Like, it's always the boys have had to play, in the middle of the bonus room or downstairs. And so we've kind of kept an eye on what they're playing. It used to be, with our oldest son, the Xbox would bring all of the neighborhood over. It would be all the boys. They would be hanging out. You'd get to know. It was very social. And it was a good thing. And it was only for a couple hours or, you know, and then you're done. You've got to go do homework and things like that. So it's kind of regulated. Over the years, it's changed. And now we're dealing with Fortnite, where I don't see the kids anymore. They're online. I can't hear what's going on. And it's sad. But they're saying it's a social platform as well. And that's kind of a you know, game changer as well. And so as a parent, it's really hard to parent those things. So you have to keep these rules. And luckily, we had these starting years ago. The cell phones go on the charger outside of our bedroom, so we can see it at night at 10, and you're relaxed. And all these things came about with trial and error. We had our oldest son in high school about his junior year. He couldn't regulate it. I mean, he couldn't find balance. All of a sudden, he was talking with his girlfriend all the time, his grades, he was tired, he was doing all this. Finally, I had enough of it, and I said, you have these ACT tests next week. And we got in an argument over something. I said, you know what? This is the hardest thing I've ever done, but I grounded him for a week away from his phone, which try and do that to a teenage boy, a junior in high school. I mean, it was 3 days. After 3 days, it was just painful. He was so mad. And I said, it's this or your car. And so, you know what? He finally, by the end of the week, he'd prepared for his ACTs. And he said to me the weirdest thing, which I can't believe to this day he said to me. He goes, that took so much stress off of me. I didn't have to answer my phones from my my friends. I didn't have to catch up on social media. You took all my social media away. I could get my homework done. He had plenty of time. And really what it taught him was that time management. Again, you know, everybody was ruling the roost and he couldn't control it. And it taught him that, you know, maybe I need some balance in my life.
And that happens again and again in families who do that same kind of thing, where they pull the media from their kids. The discovery that the kids make of how it's just expanded to consume all their time is that's not just your kid and your family. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time.
Oh, good.
Well, Kyle, what's it like to be married to the county sheriff?
<That's> hard.
No, I am agreeing. I agree with exactly all the things that we've gone through. It's the thing that's been, I guess, a learning for me is that you know, you have to be willing to change the rules. And I know that doesn't sound good from, you know, the kids' mm-hmm. perspective, but the media, the games, the activities, the apps, all of the social media activity changes, it evolves quickly. Mm-hmm. And for us, we've had to change the rules. And what I mean by that is we've had to set either limits or restrictions depending on how it's affecting our kids. Because their ability to engage with whatever it may be, the phone or the computer or the game, is so quick. And so we have to be ready to adapt. And I think as parents, we sometimes get afraid to change the rules. You know, you set rules for, you know, password restrictions mm-hmm. or parent guidelines within their access. But you have to be willing to sit back down and explain that this is going to be a change and why. And that's been a learning, I think, for me, is that that's just part of the process. You know, we've had the ability to evolve through this with three boys over being 4 years apart. So we've had some evolution in that, but for me, it's a pretty strong piece that helps in parenting.
Well, that's good.
And they're all different people. I mean, the three boys are completely different from one another. So you got to adjust to who you're talking to. One thing works for one person, it doesn't work for the other. And they all had different challenges. So, but they learned from the first one, poor guy.
You know, there's an article I read about Japanese kids, and they found that they gave these kids, and I don't know how they did this, but they gave these kids a year of hyper electronic media use. Mm-hmm. And they compared them to those who were not subject to this. Mm-hmm. And there was an increased risk of suicide in the group that was forced into this media. And I just, that bothered me a lot.
Well, these days, it's almost impossible to have that kind of empirically legitimate study because you can't find any kids who are not exposed to or have access to the internet.
Yeah,
even
yeah.
Economic level, it's just so pervasive. And so, and I'd also caution against thinking about the application of what's going on and the effect of that from cultural differences too. Japan has a larger suicide rate for teenagers in transitions when they need to move from one academic success level to another. And so there's some other stuff that could go on that too. I don't want people to worry too much about it being tied directly to suicide. It's more about the effects of your kid getting out and having other experiences that are important for a well-rounded life. Just like you would if they, in our generation, when they were watching TV. It's dramatically different, but there is a parallel about that TV watching thing.
That's your generation. We didn't have TV when
I was
growing up.
Yours was the radio. That's right.
I get no respect. You know, I think it comes down to how much the parent uses or abuses social media. Hmm. And I see a lot of people who I think are addicted to social media. Do you think you guys have friends who are addicted, or are you addicted to social media?
Yeah, it's hard. And I am an agent, so I'm on my phone all the time. And so it's really hard. I have to tell myself to put it down, and I'll have to deal with that tomorrow. And so I have to, say, okay, this is my time to spend with him. And, I'm not going to, get on my phone for a couple hours and people will live. And so you have to do that. But, it's hard. It's hard.
You know, another issue that I see frequently, it's texting while driving. And I know that's not really the topic, but it fits within that concept of how pervasive the triggers are to want to reach for the phone and use the phone. And it happens a lot. And I know that most people that are handling their phone while they're driving causes a distraction. It happens so frequently. And so that's something that really kind of tells you how strong the connection is to our phones.
And happily, there's technology which you can find by doing searches on the internet that can regulate, turn the phone off when the GPS says you're going at a certain speed, that kind of business. So there's technologies to help with that. And absolutely, it's a serious problem.
Can you set it at 1 mile per hour?
That's right.
I have that.
Or not.
It says, I'm driving, I'll call you.
That's
when
right.
We could go on all day. I mean, this has been a fun discussion, and I think a very informative one. Thank you all. But it's time to wrap it up. It's been a great pleasure having you on WBOU FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Before I sign off, one quick story. I once saw a bumper sticker reading, "The best thing a man can do for his kids is love his wife." I couldn't agree more. But I might change that last two words from "his wife" to "the kid's mother." Even divorced parents need to get along for the sake of their kids. I often tell divorced parents that just because they had a bad marriage doesn't mean they have to have a bad divorce. And Dr. Wellborn closes the acknowledgments in his book with some wonderful words of wisdom. He says, "All the worthwhile accomplishments of my life happened because Kim, his wife, is with me and for me. She is my confidant, my editor, and my link to conscientious, well-mannered people." And we might rephrase that or paraphrase that to read, "Behind every great person is another great person." So now here's your homework. Go to my website, parentingwithdrparr.com, and bring up today's program. Call your family together, listen to it with them. Then ask your kids what your family should do to avoid becoming addicted to social media. Write some basic rules. Agree on what the consequences should be for breaking these rules. Have the whole family sign the document. It will make your life easier and your kids' life safer. When you are finished, go back to the website and tell us how it went. If you had a list of rules or a contract, send them in. Other people will enjoy reading them. And if you would like to be a guest on Parenting Matters, add a short bio to your note and tell us what you would like to discuss. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your families.
You've been listening to Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. This episode is sponsored by the Knights of Columbus, Council 7764 at St. Philip Catholic Church in Franklin, Tennessee.
For more information about Dr. Parr, visit his website at www.parentingwithdrparr.com.